Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 15, Instructions for Civilized Human Beings, text number 9. I guess that's what's on the board. 7 to 9. So I'll just read the translations for 7 and 8, and then we'll read the Sanskrit for 9. Person fully aware of religious principles should never offer anything like meat, eggs, or fish in the Shraddha ceremony, and even if one is a Kshatriya, he should not eat such things. When suitable food prepared with ghee is offered to saintly persons, the function is pleasing to the forefathers and the Supreme Lord, who are never pleased when animals are killed in the name of sacrifice. So I guess most of the saintly persons weren't vegans at that time. Persons who want to advance in superior religion are advised to give up all envy of other living entities, whether in relationship to his body, words, or mind. There is no religion superior to this. To give up envy, that's the highest religion. So text 9. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Because of an awakening of spiritual knowledge, those who are intelligent in regard to sacrifice, who are actually aware of religious principles, and who are free from material desires, control the self in the fire of spiritual knowledge, or knowledge of the absolute truth. They may give up the process of ritualistic ceremonies. So what are we talking about? We're talking about a person performing some sacrifice. And that he has to have certain qualifications if he's going to give up religious ritualistic sacrifices. And what are those qualifications? What are some of the, anyone can remember one of the qualifications? Yes, free from material desires. Yes, controls the senses. Right? Very good. Control of the self and the fire of transcendent spiritual knowledge. What is he actually aware of? Religious principles, yes. And how are they in regard to sacrifice? What is the quality that's described here in the relationship to sacrifice that they possess? They're intelligent in regard to sacrifice. So if we awaken our spiritual awareness and we're intelligent what the purpose of sacrifice is, what the whole thing's about, what the purpose is, and we actually know what the principles of religion are, and we're free from material desires, and that we're being controlled by transcendental knowledge or the knowledge of the absolute truth, then we can give up the process of ritualistic ceremonies. So how many ritualistic ceremonies do we perform in the Krishna consciousness movement? Every day, how many ceremonies we're performing? Zero. I hope so. I don't know. Secretly, maybe someone's performing some religious sacrifice, but purport. People are generally very much interested in karmakanda ritualistic ceremonies for elevation to the higher planetary systems. But when one awakens his spiritual knowledge, he becomes uninterested in such elevation and engages himself fully in jnana jaga to find the objective of life. The objective of life is to stop completely the miseries of birth and death and to return home back to Godhead. When one cultivates knowledge for this purpose, he is considered to be on a higher platform than those who engage in karma, jaga, or fruitive activities. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatya De Sitarane. At the end of the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Evam Bude Puram Bhutva Samstabhyatmanam Atmanaha Jahi Shatru Mahabaho Kamarupam Dharashadam. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, the mind, and the intelligence, one should control the lower self by the higher, and thus by spiritual strength, conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So Krishna, at the end of the third chapter, he recommends Buddhi Yoga, as he'll recommend throughout the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna had asked the question that, I want to do the right thing. I want to do something that's going to be progressive, make myself happy, and do good for others. I know what I'm supposed to do because I have some knowledge I've studied from my guru. I learned so many different things from the Vedas. I want to do them, but why is it that I don't wind up doing those things sometimes? So then Krishna goes through a whole explanation. It is lust. Sounds terrible. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is turns into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. In modern society, the idea of sin, they've kind of tried to sweep that out of our vocabulary, as if it's some kind of archaic conception that some old people in India, who sages in the Himalayas, who couldn't do anything and were frustrated, so they started to tell everyone else they couldn't do anything either. And they call that sin. But Krishna says that sin has its manifestation, which is directly perceivable by us. Namely, that it covers our consciousness, and therefore we don't see things clearly. Just like, for instance, at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has told us that the body is changing, but the person inside the body, the soul, who happens to be ourselves, we're not talking about some, you know, person in some other planet somewhere, we're talking about ourselves. Although the body keeps on changing, the soul within the body is not changing, but is always remaining the same. Therefore, every living entity, including ourselves, are all spiritual beings within an ever-changing material energy. And although we're partially conscious of what we see around us, and even we're partially conscious of our own body, and certainly we're aware of our own feelings and other subtle experiences that we have, but we're actually not very conscious of ourselves. So that's called illusion. Illusion, well, first it's called avidya or ignorance, that we're not aware of things as they actually are. We're aware of the way we conceive of things. And then the next thing is we're an illusion. Not only we don't know who we are, but we think ourselves to be something that we're actually not. Namely this body or this subtle mind or some relationship that we have with things connected with this body. We may think that we're English, or we think we're Americans, or even some other living entity may think, I'm a ghost. I'm more universal conception. I don't identify myself with any particular country because I'm a universal ghost. But that's also illusion, because we're not the body. We don't know who we are. That's avidya or ignorance, and we're thinking ourselves to be something we're not. That's illusion. Now, that's only one side of material energy, known as avaratmika shakti, and there are different degrees of it. Dumena vriyate vanir etardar shomalena cha Itovana Rita Garbas Tate Navram Avritam. Just like the mirror is covered by the dust, or the embryo is covered by the womb, or the fire is covered by smoke, So the living entity is covered by different degrees of this lust, kam. Fortunately, we're in the human form of life. We can't understand exactly how fortunate we are unless we hear from the Vedic literature. Otherwise, people, they just take it for granted. Of course I'm a human being. I'm always going to be a human being. And I was born a human being. They have no idea how long it takes to become a human being, or the fact that there is a good possibility in the material world one can be something other than a human being. It is said that every cell in the body is alive. Therefore, it's alive because it has a soul and a super soul. And there are trillions of cells just in our own little body. Now, in the human form of life, it is compared to the fire covered by smoke. The idea is that when the fire is covered by smoke, if you carefully handle the fire, it can be made to blaze, and naturally the smoke will go away. There'll be a lot of fire and very little smoke. On the other hand, when the mirror is covered by dust, that's compared to the animals who cannot see themselves at all, because even though they may look into the mirror, all they see is dust. And the embryo is covered by the womb is compared to the trees and other immovable living entities who cannot move, just like the embryo cannot get up and walk out of the womb unless you're a Shukadeva Goswami. And most people are not Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, the human form of life is a very rare opportunity to carefully handle that fire so that it can be made to blaze. Krishna advised Arjuna, Tasma Tvam Indriyanya Do Niyamya Bharatarshiva Patmanam Prajihiyanam Jnana Vijnana Nashanam. Therefore, in the very beginning, regulate the senses, and therefore, by doing that, Tasma Tvam Indriyanya Do Niyamya Bharatar Patmanam Prajihiyanam. Conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. And there are different levels of regulating the senses, which include the mind. And it's all being done by intelligence. The ultimate goal is somehow or another to use our intelligence so that we bring our consciousness to Krishna, and when our consciousness is on Krishna, then the result is we enter into the Daivi Prakriti, and in that Daivi Prakriti, there are a number of things happen. We get ecstatic love for Krishna, or we get at least not ecstatic love for Krishna all at once. We get pleasure, transcendental pleasure, which is coming from Ladini Shakti. And we get Samvit, which is knowledge, or Chit Shakti. We get Chit Shakti, which is we become aware of things as they actually are. Therefore, we know if I continue executing this activity which brings me into contact with Krishna, then I'll become more and more happy and I'll become more and more aware. And if I stop doing that and I do something other, anything else, then I'll lose that potency and either I act in goodness or in passion or ignorance. To different degrees, I'll be suffering and I'll be an illusion. Therefore, one becomes encouraged to perform those activities which will actually bring one's intelligence to the consciousness of Krishna, will focus the mind. I probably said the art of Krishna consciousness is the art of focusing one's attention and giving one's love to Krishna. So that focusing the attention and giving one's love is a function of the intelligence. And that process is called sacrifice. And Krishna explains so many varieties of sacrifice in the fourth chapter that will focus one's attention and eventually give one's love to Krishna, either to Krishna in the form of Paramatma or in the form of Brahman, or ultimately in the form of Krishna holding a flute or in Vaikuntha with four arms. Somehow or another, these sacrifices help elevate one out of ignorance, out of passion, into goodness, and then eventually to come to the platform of awareness, spiritual awareness. Generally speaking, people perform sacrifice in the Vedas, as Krishna has explained in the second chapter, because they want some material benefit. That's the only thing that's going to attract them. Without material allurement, they have no interest. It's like a child. You want to give them some medicine, they won't take it. But when you offer a lollipop first, because nowadays, I guess it has to be a first-class lollipop. I get a lollipop every day, big deal. I'll give you a new video game, and it's real. It's you actually kill people. Wow, I'll take the medicine. Something new and exciting. No, you have to offer them something allurement. You can go to the heavenly planets, and you can meet the apsaras there in the Nandakandana forest and kiss them. Oh yes, whatever you want. I'll do anything. I'm surrendered. I'm spiritual. I'm pious. Or, yes, there. Generally, it's you can become healthy, you can become wealthy, you can become powerful. Everything that is being advertised. Same thing. Janma Aishwarya Shuta Shribir. You can get Janma Aishwarya. Janma means you can get a better position. And of course, getting a better position means you control more people, you can get more wealth. Aishwarya, you can get more opulence and wealth. Shuta, you can learn how to manipulate everything. Ultimately, modern society all gets down to wealth and sense gratification. Prabhupada said, one man is asking another man, are you intelligent? So he's checking his pocket to see if there's any money. And if there's some money, that proves he has some intelligence. Therefore, people are allured by these promises. The same thing, every advertisement is promising, you smoke my cigarette, then you'll get all the intelligence how to get money and wealth and women and sense gratification. In every puff, it becomes clearer. Or even you drink my water, you'll become more and more enlightened. There's even one commercial like that. You saw that commercial? What was the name of that water? Manta something. Some kind of spring water. So this man, he's on a horse, he's traveling along, and suddenly he hears this lady screaming, help, help. So he gets off the horse, takes his rope to find out, oh no, actually he just gets off the horse, and he finds on the edge of the cliff that there's this lady, she's hanging on to a branch of a tree, and she winks at him, very pretty lady. And she winks at him, help. And he said, don't worry, ma'am, I'll be right back. He goes to get his rope to save this damsel. Then there's this bottle of water, so he takes the bottle of water. He drinks it, and suddenly he gets enlightened. And he sees the future. He marries this lady. He has three children, and he has one of the child in the lap. He's trying to feed it some milk from a bottle. The lady's old mother comes in. She's an old lady with kind of curls in her hair. He's sitting there. He's just bored to death trying to feed this little kid. And he thinks, my God. So then he puts the rope back onto the saddle, gets under the horse and rides away. What's that? Moment of enlightenment. I don't know how much it helped the water company sell its water. It certainly probably attracted some attention. I'm sure he got fired afterwards. In any case, that's generally the advertisement. You take our product and you'll become enlightened and enlivened to enjoy your senses. They've left out religion. They've left out moksha, liberation. But the Vedas don't leave out those things. The first thing, well, they promise you those things. And then when one actually gets those things by the process of sacrifice, because they're promising the same thing. You work like a dog, and then we promise you'll be able to eat like a hog. You'll be able to sleep like a bear and have sex like a pigeon. So modern society is advertising the same thing. Get money, and somehow or another you'll be able to completely gratify your senses endlessly without any restriction, and you'll be living in literally hog heaven. So similarly, the Vedas advertise, you follow this ritual, this sacrifice, this ceremony, and you can get health, you can get wealth, you can go to the heavenly planets, you can become a demigod and get mystic power. And people perform those when there is actually a saintly priest, a priest who has knowledge of ritualistic ceremonies, how to properly perform them, who has the power of chanting mantras to actually produce the result. And lo and behold, people get the result. They become happy, in the sense, materially happy. They get health. Wealth comes to them, real wealth, that is, grains. The rain comes in time. The grains grow. The animals are happy and well fed. The jewels are in abundance, etc., etc. And eventually, after leaving this body, one goes to the heavenly planets for some time, or even gains mystic power through the process of Ashtanga Yoga. But then one realizes, lo and behold, that this sacrifice, it works. It gives me a result. Therefore, let me study the Vedas more. Maybe there is something more, just like that story of Sanatana Goswami and the touchstone. The touchstone. One man wanted to get some ultimately wealth. So he went to, he found Narada Muni. Narada Muni told him that Sanatana Goswami, he's living in Vrindavan. He has a touchstone. You can go there. Touchstones turn metal into gold. He went there and he found Sanatana Goswami. He said, I heard you have a touchstone. Please give it to me. Sanatana Goswami said, it's where I have all my garbage. You can find it there. The man got it from the garbage, was very happy, started to touch bell metal. It all turned into gold. I'm rich, I'm wealthy, my life is perfect. I can buy whatever I want now. But then he thought that why did Sanatana Goswami put this touchstone into the garbage if it was so valuable? Certainly he must have something more valuable. He went to Sanatana Goswami. He asked for his, do you have something more valuable than this touchstone? Sanatana Goswami said, yes, but you have to throw the touchstone into the ocean and then I'll give it to you. The man threw the touchstone into the ocean and Sanatana Goswami gave him the mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Similarly, one reads the Vedas, one finds out that it works. I can actually get what I want from in the material world if I follow the advice of the Vedas. But then one realizes that's only a little part of the Vedas. And then one acquires from the priest, is there something more, something higher? And then one begins the Jnana Karma section of the Vedas. Yes, you have to execute something else, austerities, penance, charity, and then you make it free from the bodily concept of life. Therefore, Krishna says in the 33rd verse of the 4th chapter, Shreyan Jnana Dhamma Jagnash, Shreyan Jnana, Shrayan Dravya Maya Jagnat. Shrayan Dravya Maya Jagnat. Dravya Maya means sacrificing material things for getting some material, more material things. That's what everyone does. People get up in the morning, they sacrifice their sleep. It's the only thing they ever become detached from is from their bed. But that's a detachment. I mean, some people, they rather just remain attached to their bed the whole day. But some people, in order to get something higher, they become at least detached from their bed at a certain time of the day. And then they go and they perform sacrifice on the computer, adding up numbers, so they can ultimately get the reward, some ticket or a piece of paper that authorizes them to buy another computer that they then go home and kill people on. So they're willing to perform some sacrifice for getting what they think is a higher taste. So everyone is performing sacrifice. Shrayan, Dravayamaya, Jagna, Jnana Jagna Parantapa. But higher than sacrificing one's material possessions to get other material possessions is to sacrifice one's knowledge to get higher knowledge. One's conception of life to get a higher conception of life. A more real conception of life. Therefore, Krishna says, Tadvidi prani patena pari prashnena sevaya upadekshanti de jnanam jnaninas tadvidarshanaha. For this, the simple process is, first of all, namanta eva, try to learn how to become submissive. Submissive to who? Jivanti sanmukharitam bhavati avaratam. Therefore, Krishna, first of all, tells Arjuna, you're not as intelligent as you think you are. Actually, he tells him you're a fool, but in a very expert way, because Krishna is very expert. He says, Ashochanavashochastvam pragyamvadam chabasase gatasuns agatasuns cha nanu soshati pandita. While speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. So Krishna doesn't tell Arjuna immediately you're a fool, number one. Prahlad Maharaj told his father that, because Prahlad was not so diplomatic. Although he's a little diplomatic, he said that, my dear father, O best of the Asuras, Asuryavarya Dehinam, that, oh my father, oh best of the Asuras, that I think that you're actually fool number one. The best thing I've learned in school, my dear father, is that you're number one fool. Because his father was asking, what's the best thing he learned in school? So he said, I think you're a fool. Not a fool, but the best of the fools. His father did not appreciate this. And therefore, but he wasn't, at least he got some good advice. But Krishna was a little bit more diplomatic with Arjuna. He said, the way you're speaking, no learned man speaks like that. Therefore, he's saying indirectly, you're a fool. Just like you walked up to someone and said, my dear sir, a very attractive person doesn't look like you. So that's an indirect way of saying you're not very attractive. That a learned person, he doesn't speak like you. That means you're a fool. You're speaking like a fool. And why you're a fool? Because you're in the Bali concept of life. Because you don't even know the most basic thing, that the body is external and that the real person is a soul. And the soul doesn't die. But you're talking as if they're all going to die and you're lamenting. So you're a fool. And Arjuna, he didn't rebel and say, my dear Krishna, you're a fool. May your nose fall off in the next 3 weeks too. Like in the sacrifice of Jaga, Daksha Jaga. Nanda Kumara who's the follower of Lord Shiva, as soon as Lord Daksha's followers, Shiva got up and left, then they all thought, oh, Shiva didn't actually leave, Daksha left in a huff. And he cursed Lord Shiva, who was sitting there meditating on Vishnu, and Nanda Kumara, he couldn't take it. And he started to criticize Daksha. And Daksha's followers started to criticize him. So generally, even in the heavenly planets, even the highest planetary systems, you say something bad about me, and immediately I say something bad about you. Learned people don't talk like you. Well, learned people don't talk like you either. You're a fool. Well, you're a bigger fool than all of us. May your nose fall off in the next 3 weeks. Oh, that is actually a serious matter. I mean, someone said your nose fall off in the next 3 weeks. I mean, within a week it started to become loose. What to speak of 3 weeks? But Arjuna was tolerant, and he said, Karapanya dosho pahata svabhava preach chami swam dharma samudra cheta. Now I'm confused about my duty, and I've lost my composure due to miserly weakness. In this condition, I'm asking to tell me clearly what is best for me. So at least Arjuna, he realized he was not happy, that he was lamenting. He didn't want to stay in that condition. He knew something was wrong and he wanted to get out of it. So similarly, everyone knows something's wrong and they're taking shelter. Unfortunately, they're taking shelter of blind people who themselves are actually feeling something's wrong, but they're pretending as if they know everything. Or they're cheaters. Modern societies, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada said, is a combination of cheaters and the cheated. Sense gratification is good. It should be unrestricted. Then everyone will be happy. And we, in order to do that, we sell you our product. And although we ourselves wouldn't take it, because we know how dangerous it is, just like they have a very profitable business for doctors, is to give people chemotherapy. It's the only medicine that they prescribe that they get a percentage back on the cost. And it's not cheap. $12,000 for one round of chemotherapy. You get a little percentage back from that, you're making some money. But when the doctors who are giving chemotherapy were asked in a survey, would you give this chemotherapy, would you take it yourself or give it to your family members? 75% of them said definitely not. Unless I can make a few bucks for my grandmother, giving it to my grandma. She's old anyhow. Might as well kill her off quick. Make some money off of her, from her. In any case, that's called cheating. I'm giving someone else advertising, demanding, practically in some parts of America, they demand legally that you must take this therapy, although the doctors who are giving it wouldn't give it to themselves or anyone else, especially their family members. Therefore, people are being misled. Andaya tandero pigimanaste pisha tantra uru dhamibara. At least they should know what will actually be effective. Even though you have to perform some ritualistic ceremony, because it's all a ritualistic ceremony. You sit in the office, in the hospital, whatever, and they do their ceremony. They bring in the high priests, they bring in all the ingredients for the sacrifice. And they perform the sacrifice, chanting, doing the rituals, and the result is you die. Or at least you're crippled, or you lose part of your brain, whatever. Or maybe you survive, in spite of the treatment. And then, by their sacrifice, by the ritualistic performance they've undergone, generally speaking, the sacrifice is not complete. And they invite you again when there's some other problem, to perform a similar ritualistic process that they've already got down to a ritual, and you're in the middle of the sacrifice. You're being sacrificed. You are the offering. Or at least your money is the offering to the sacrifice. You have to pay to the priest for the sacrifice. So it's a ritual. There's so many rituals going on. You tap this little button on your computer, and that's part of the ritual. And then the computer appears, and you perform so many ritualistic ceremonies on your computer. And you enter into so many different realms of consciousness, hopefully Krishna consciousness, by this ritualistic activity. But the sacrifice is ultimately to get something better. That something better should be clean air, fresh water, nice relation with people, nice, comfortable, peaceful life. That should be the object of sacrifice. And after performing that, then one asks, is there something higher? And higher than that is knowledge, spiritual knowledge. How to actually realize that we're not this body, that we're actually a spiritual soul. Moksha, liberation from the material conceptions of life, and ultimately awareness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that sacrifices in this age is the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That is the sacrifice. Unfortunately, in our brain, because we've been trained up in so many other rituals, which we're attached to, of course, it's not the Vedic rituals generally. Most of us weren't trained up, you know, chanting Vedic mantras when 5 years old. I don't know of any university or any school, maybe our Avanti school, they chant some mantras. But in general school, at least the one I was raised in, I wasn't taught to chant mantras to the Supreme Lord. You know, it was pledge allegiance to the flag. The flag was our God, which represented, you know, how many states in the Union. We were pledging our allegiance to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life that we should live and everyone else in the world should die. Liberty, we should be free to do whatever we want in the name of so-called freedom. And pursuit of happiness, we should be able to beg, borrow, or steal and get all the sense gratification we need or we desire. That's what we're pledging. We're going to be good demons and we're going to help all the other demons. So that was our mantra. God bless America, land of the free and the brave, whatever. Nice idea, but unfortunately, it was rather a limited concept. The mantra didn't really produce anything transcendental or enlightenment. But from the very beginning of life, Prahlad Maharaj says that people should be trained. Kamara acharat pragyo, dharman bhagavatani ha. Because the human form of life is very rare, and it's an opportunity to perform sacrifice to actually get out of the material illusions. So we're chanting Hare Krishna, but the background has to be, we also have to become detached and see, what am I actually doing? Why am I actually attached to all these material things? Why is it I try to chant Hare Krishna, but my mind says, all right, you know, you got to finish your rounds. I know you got to finish your rounds. It's getting late, but I know you don't really want to feel like doing it. I know it's a real heavy burden. You know, Kalagraha, the spiritual master put a heavy burden on your neck. You got to do it. So do something entertaining. You know, find out what's in the news. You know, maybe you can go on Facebook for a while, make yourself feel good, and when you feel good, then you can go back to chanting this heavy Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. They say it's not different from Krishna. Oh, yeah, right, all right. Ram, Ram. Oh, God, I got to finish my rounds, it's so late. Maybe I can just do it on my bed, on my pillow. Yeah, Maya says, yeah, don't worry, I'll keep you awake. All right. Perfect attention, just lie on your side. Rapt attention. And if you fall asleep, I'll wake you up. So because our minds were just so many things, so many rituals during the day, you know, eating, sleeping, whatever else our mind can conceive of. So we have to realize that we're attached to so many material conceptions of life, and we have to hear from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita regularly, although it seems like the same thing over and over again, but we have to hear in such a way that it becomes fresh, it becomes real, it becomes part of our life, it becomes interesting. Interesting means it actually has something to do with my real experience during the day. It's not just some words 5,000 years ago about this dry subject of detachment and whatever. We have to see, you know, how we're attached. How, when we're trying to get out of the bed, how our body is just sticking to the bed. The alarm clock's going off, but the body can't move. It's stuck. And it's not stuck because, hopefully it's not stuck because someone glued us to the bed. Oh, what happened? No, it's stuck because our mind stuck to the bed. It's stuck to the mode of ignorance. So we have to see when we get up in the morning how that's really detachment, how we're detaching our body from the coverings of the warm quilt, the shelter of the nice soft pillow, whatever else. That this is detachment. This is the beginning of our detachment. And similarly, we can see throughout the day how to become detached from our material conceptions of life and become attached to the hearing and chanting about Krishna. That and service to Krishna. How that's really automatically will detach us from so many other false conceptions. Therefore, we hear this philosophy in such a way as it becomes real. We're able to live the philosophy, then our progress in Krishna consciousness and our attachment to the holy name will become very strong. And we'll be able to see what was accomplished in other eras by a very difficult, arduous processes, can now be obtained simply by this chanting of Hare Krishna if it's done in the proper consciousness in the proper way. Not worrying where our mind's going. It's not that only when we're chanting Hare Krishna we're worrying where our mind's going. We're always worrying where our mind's going. The only thing is that we're not aware of it because we just go wherever the mind goes. We're not even aware. We don't worry about where the mind's going generally because we just along we're for the ride, wherever it's going to take us. But when we chant Hare Krishna, suddenly we realize our mind's going to many places. It's not supposed to be going if it's not going to Krishna. And now I have a battle. Suddenly there's a battle to bring my mind to Krishna. My mind doesn't want to go to Krishna. It wants to go all over the universe. Therefore, rather than fight against the mind, we should try to hear from Krishna, especially remember how to improve our chanting. Use our intelligence, use the instructions to improve the quality of our chanting. And if we do that, then Krishna reveals himself to us, and therefore the mind becomes absorbed in thoughts about Krishna. We can't force Krishna to come by some mental effort. Krishna will come into our consciousness if we actually chant lovingly and appealing to Krishna to kindly come and reveal his divine service, loving service to us. Otherwise, the struggle against the mind is just a waste of time. But at least if we do that, at least we become aware that we should struggle against the mind. And that when we stop chanting, then generally we fall into a state of unconsciousness and we just follow where the mind wants us to go. which is generally not back to Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments?